Look, the worst part about business travel is worrying about my wife and kids at home alone. My family's safety is my responsibility. That's why I started researching home security. I called the big alarm companies, checked online, even looked at doing it myself. But the best technology for the best price came from Vivint. They even won the Consumer's Digest Best Buy Award. Yes, Vivint gives me a complete security system, but it does even more. Vivint's video technology is unreal. I can see what's going on in my home right from my smartphone, tablet, or computer. I can even lock the doors remotely if my kids forget. Best yet, I got Vivint's no equipment costs and free install deal. $1,300 worth of camera and security equipment at no charge. Vivint was the easy choice for my family's safety.
Take control of your family's safety with Vivint. Order now for up to $1,500 in security equipment at no charge. Just pay as little as $99 for activation. Plus, call now and installation is free. Call 877-205-0849. 877-205-0849. 877-205-0849. Restrictions apply. 48 or 60-month agreement at minimum. $49.99 per month required. Not available in Louisiana. See Vivint.com for license numbers.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Gary. Wait, hold on. Welcome to Chuck Morse Speaks Special Edition. This is your host, Chuck Morse. I'd like to welcome aboard Gary Galonek. Gary, how are you? Principal of National Sales Manager of Gaming at All Star Incentive Marketing.
Good, Chuck. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Let me just do a quick intro here. After 4 years as an account manager at NCR Corporation, Gary joined the family-owned and operated All Star Premium Products, later renamed Incentive Marketing, in 1990. After managing many high-profile accounts such as Dunkin' Donuts, Gary began working with Foxwoods Resort Casinos in the mid-1990s and was instrumental in the early days of their Wampum Rewards program, the largest in the country of its kind and at the time. He oversaw All-Star's growth over the next 15 years to include gaming clients from coast to coast in over a dozen gaming jurisdictions, providing everything from event and promotions, award sourcing, to full-blown patron loyalty programs. All-Star's current clients include Mohegan Sun, Turning Stone, Chickasaw Nation, Empire City, at Yonkers Raceway, and many more. Gary, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Gary, I've been to Foxwoods certainly a couple of times, maybe even more than a couple of times.
Well, and, you're not
and
alone.
And Mohegan Sun. And, I can tell you that Foxwoods resort, at least the last time I was there, it looks to me almost like it's bigger, it's richer, it's more successful than most third world nations at this point.
Well, it was, certainly up until the bubble burst in 07. It was the largest gaming facility in the Western Hemisphere, and they had a mistime expansion with their MGM tower, which took place right around then. So they've had some financial woes. They've had to restructure some debt. I know a number of Mashantucket Pequots who are on the tribal rolls, and certainly their stipend has taken a hit that they get as tribal members, and there's been some austerity measures put in place the last few years to try to make them more competitive. I mean, let's face it, you know, they're getting it from all angles. Rhode Island recently passed legislation that will give it's Lincoln, Rhode Island.
Sure.
Property, Twin River, full-blown table games. We've got the Massachusetts legislation, obviously, which is a hot topic here. I just read that New Hampshire is ready to pass legislation calling for one full-blown resort casino. They have them in Maine. You know, we go west of the border, and Turning Stone Resort Casino in Oneida, New York, is one of my favorite in the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
Just a great mid-sized casino with all the other amenities, golf and whatnot. So,
right, but yet I think also they might be somewhat affected by the economic downturn in general. And I would imagine that they would come back as the economy hopefully gets better.
You would think they're trying to shake things up. They're adding a factory outlet shopping. They're mm-hmm. trying to create multiple reasons for people to go. And, you know, Las Vegas is an interesting model. I mean, 20 years ago, I think it was 15% of their revenue was non-gaming. It's actually now two-thirds and going on 70% of revenue in Las Vegas is non-gaming, which, you know, which emphasizes the importance of the restaurants and the spas and the golf and all the amenities, especially for a non-gaming spouse.
Right.
And that's
there's
one
even
of the things
for kids. I mean, I took my family there about 10 years ago. At the time, my daughter was only 7 or 8 years old, and we had a great time. There were fun things to do. There was excellent restaurants. We stayed at the New York. There was shows, fantastic shows. The city is unlike anything in the country. And so I think that Foxwoods seems to reflect that value as well, in that there are very interesting restaurants and stores, and there's a museum for the Pequots, and you know, there's a resort, you know, there's, as you say, spas and swimming pools and a great hotel.
Well, unlike Vegas, you can't bungee jump off the stratosphere. I'm not sure if you did that while you were there, but they've tried to go that route. I don't necessarily think the two mix all that well in a single mm-hmm. Resort spa. You know, in a city like Las Vegas, certainly you can do it. But to have the little treehouse, you know, babysitter room
right.
next to the 2,000 slot floor is a, I don't know, it's an interesting paradigm. But.
Okay, my guest is Gary Galonek, incentive marketing. We're talking about gaming here, particularly in Massachusetts. Governor Deval Patrick, one of the main points of his election in the first place and continues to be a main talking issue for him is the idea of bringing casinos to Massachusetts. There was a time when I recall there was something like 3 or 4 different venues being discussed, one in Springfield, one in New Bedford, I think one up in Lowell, and certainly one in Boston. First of all, how is that proceeding? Secondly, is that, I mean, on the face of it, you mentioned that there's been a downturn. Would they reach a point where the market could be saturated, or they can they essentially offer different things that would generate interest?
Well, getting back to the first part of that question, it's clear as mud right now, Chuck. The Gaming Commission did establish 3 zones, and you alluded to some of the cities. But basically, the state's been broken into 3 zones, region A, B, and C. In the western region, out in my neck of the woods, it was a foregone conclusion up until they put the applications out for bid that Mohegan Sun in Palmer would be the place. Well, fast forward to now, you've had 4 people pony up $400,000 for the western license, including MGM and Penn Gaming for Springfield, and Hard Rock for a location in Western Mass as well. So you're going to have a 4-horse race for that license. In the Boston zone or Region A, it was a foregone conclusion up until about a year ago that Suffolk Downs, partnered with Caesars Entertainment, would get that license. Now, you know, a guy from the Gaming Hall of Fame comes to town by the name of Steve Wynn. And if you know anything about Steve Wynn, he started the whole deal by building the Mirage on the Las Vegas Strip.
Sure.
He's got a successful casino in Macau. He's back in Las Vegas with the Wynn. And he is certainly to be taken very seriously with his proposal. And then in Region C, which basically comprises most of southeastern Mass, there's kind of a placeholder for the Mashpee Wampanoags for a tribal gaming entity. Now, as you may have read, the Bureau of Indian Affairs rejected the contract between the state of Massachusetts and the Mashpee Wampanoags because they thought it was too rich to the state. Keep in mind, they don't pay taxes. So this is a basically, in lieu of taxes, a percentage of gross revenues, which was to be 21.5%. They didn't like that. So behind closed doors, they've come up with another deal that they're going to present to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, assuming they like it, and it's obviously going to be less than 21.5%. Keep in mind, everybody else is paying 25%. So there is
a
little preferential treatment.
It's a huge share for basically an impoverished tribe of Wampanoags. Was the objection lodged by the Wampanoags themselves, or was it the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington?
It was the BIA. The Wampanoags love the deal. I mean,
sure,
it's a better deal than most others. You know, Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods pay 25% to the state of Connecticut. So basically what's happening now is they're going to be given a year to sort it out. If they can't, the word is that the commission is going to put that license back out to bid. So perhaps some of the folks here that lose out in regions A and B, you know, my front runner in Western region is MGM. So let's say MGM is the winner. Well, Mohegan Sun could then bid, and of course they are a tribal entity as well, for that Southeastern Mass license. And then you've got this rogue fourth license, which is going to go to a slot parlor only, which I'm less optimistic about its success. But you've got several people who ponied up the $400,000 to get in that race, including Plain Ridge Race Course, Raynham Park, right here in Worcester. There's a company that's looking at some land at the old Wyman Gordon location. So that one can go anywhere. The dog tracks are considered the front runners because they've already got some infrastructure there, certainly for parking. Raynham and Plain Ridge.
And also, I think the Foxwoods itself started out just as a slot parlor. And
bingo hall. They were a bingo hall. Yeah. No, they went full blown table games and slots when they got their license in the early 90s. Yeah, but a lot of them started as bingo halls.
But it looks to me like that things are proceeding. I mean, that already the three zones have been approved. The governor's behind it. The state legislature is essentially behind it. At least they were, I believe, last I checked.
Oh, it's passed. You're right. But you know, as only Massachusetts can do, you know, not only are we 10 years too late to the party, but this is a very protracted process. They're not due to announce the slot parlor awarded license until December. Now, they say it might happen in September, but that's the low-hanging fruit of the four. You know, the three full-blown resort casino licenses, you know, there's still another year before they have to award those. And then it's going to take, you know, a year or more to build. So we're looking at this point, you know, we're looking at end of 2015 into 2016 before we're going to any full-blown resort casinos. And, you know,
although I would say that by that point, the economy should be back and it would be coming online, hopefully just in time, not during a recession. Now, when you talk about full-blown casinos, I would imagine, what do you mean? I mean, are these going to be of the scale of a Foxwoods? I think Mohegan Sun is a little bit less of a scale. Do we have any idea of what these things are going to look like and what's going to be involved?
Yeah, all of the companies, certainly the major players, the MGMs, the Mohegans, the Penns, have given renderings.
Mm-hmm.
The minimum investment was to be $500 million. Now, when I say full-blown resort casino, that means there is a hotel component. There is besides the gaming floor, a multitude of restaurants, retail, performing arts space.
Sure.
So that's, you know, that as opposed to the slot parlor, which really only has to provide up to 2,000 slot machines and none of the rest of the investment. And that investment's $125 million. So it's one quarter of what they're looking for in the resort casinos. But the Gaming Commission got what they want because already in Western Mass, the price of entry is up to around $800 million. You know, Mohegan said they were going to build a $600 million complex in Palmer. MGM rolled out a plans for a $775 million resort complex in Springfield. Mohegan just announced that they're making their $600 million now look more like $750 million. So the commission, this is exactly what they wanted. It was not only that $400,000 times 11, which is sitting in some coffers somewhere, but a healthy competition for these licenses. And, you know, the price of entry is not going to be $500 million. By the time it's all said and done, it's going to be $800 million and maybe upwards of $1 billion. to impress the commission.
But the price of entry, when we talk about the money involved, most of that goes toward an investment in the infrastructure and the actual development of the site.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, these are, you know, I would think that on the surface, and by the way, my guest is Gary Galonek, All-Star Incentive Marketing. We're talking gaming in Massachusetts. That we have an enormous amount of money being invested into the state, and that's a huge boost to the tax revenues in the state. But it's also a boost to employment. It's a boost to industry in terms of building. It's a boost in retail, as you say. It brings in jobs. You know,
oh, no question. The construction alone will cause, you know, be tens of thousands of jobs in the few years it'll take to get them up and running. But, you know, at one point, Foxwoods, and it was one of my clients. I was there every week for about 5 years, and fortunately we've got a team now that handles our work down there. But I used to count the license plates, and, you know, 40%, it was officially 37%, but it was probably trending a little higher at one point, of those patrons were from Massachusetts, a little less at Mohegan Sun, which has a bigger draw from Fairfield County, but upwards of 15-18% of Mohegan's business were Massachusetts residents. Well, as of last year, their contributions with their 25% over the years has topped $15 billion. So,
right.
You know, let's just say that
the money
a third
in the
of
state.
That
no. I mean, really,
came from the
I mean,
Bay State.
It's revenue that would be kept in the state with a pretty large percentage of it going toward state taxes, a reasonable percent toward city or town taxes, not to mention employing people in the state and offering various services in the state. You know, in a sense, these things are almost like hitting an oil well. You know, I would look at it that way.
Mitigated a little bit by the cost, you know, which depending on where you are and who you believe, can be significant when it comes to dealing with, you know, some of the social issues.
I wanted to ask you about. But before that, I'm just curious about, was not Bob Kraft involved for a while in this, or is he out?
Well, Bob Kraft is out because Foxborough, you know, the first precursor to getting a license is the host community has to embrace it.
Right.
And by way of a vote, and Foxborough made it clear that they were not going to embrace another mega development in their town. Bob Kraft was actually partnered with Steve Wynn, and Steve Wynn, when he realized it wasn't happening in Foxborough, is now looking at a Boston location off the Mystic River that's within eyeshot. I hear I'm not. Really well versed in that area, but it's within eyeshot of the racetrack proposal.
Right, I think the site is actually near there's a Costco over there now, and there's a lot of development on that shoreline in Everett, and there's some leftover open space there, which is unusual for a place as close to the city of Boston. Good location.
Yep.
What about Donald Trump? He's not involved at all.
No. No, but, you know, very quietly, not to be outdone by their competitors in Connecticut, Foxwoods is actually backing the Milford proposal and a group based in Milford right off 495, which is another
It's right near the Rhode Island border, too.
Yeah, they're a little north of the border, but you know, south-west of Boston and certainly that 495, 128 area is heavily trafficked. So they're a third player in the Eastern license. But I still say it'll come down to Wynn and Suffolk Downs going toe-to-toe.
Yeah, you made reference to some of the social issues connected to it, and there are citizen opponents that come out quite vigorously against it for those reasons. What is the deal with that? I mean, is this a problem with regard to addiction for gambling? And if so, do the casinos do anything to help people with that in that regard? I mean, it's kind of like, you don't want to ban the right of people to go to a bar, but at the same time, bartenders do shut people off.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a gambling addiction is going to manifest itself in other ways, with or without a casino, whether it's scratch tickets or, you know, whatever, sports betting with a bookie. And I think the American Gaming Association does a really good job of providing avenues for help.
What is it that they do, just out of curiosity?
They have they have helplines. They have they'll train casinos on identifying problem gamblers. You can actually, and this is not a joke, you can ban yourself from a casino.
Right.
There are people who actually say, I don't have the wherewithal to not gamble. I want, and these people will put themselves on a watch list and actually go to the casino and see if they get.
I see. No, that's interesting. So in other words, they can actually self-regulate in a sense, tell the casino, and then they will be banned by choice because they have a problem with going there. I would think that those things, if those things were in place and if the casinos were open about that and visible with regard to those programs, that would mitigate a lot of the concerns that people might have, because, you know, the bigger picture is that people have a right to gamble. It's a free country, and they're going to do it anyway. So, do we want to have bookies setting up like they used to do, I had a great uncle who was involved in that back in the 1930s. I don't think we want to go back to that.
No, and you're right, and it really reinforces the idea that, first of all, going to a casino is a social activity for most folks, and the more things that you can provide in the casino that are not gaming related, some people just want to be in an environment other than their normal environment. Yeah. And if that's a casino, and there's a Cirque du Soleil show, MGM has the exclusive rights in the casino world for providing Cirque shows. Well, it might cost $100 a ticket, but at least when you've left, you've seen a Cirque show, or you've eaten at a Bobby Flay restaurant, or you've been to a spa, you've got a massage. So there's a takeaway, a tangible takeaway from leaving, win or lose, if you're there to do more than gamble. So that's why,
And a good example of that, and I would hope that these new casinos would reflect it, is Foxwoods, in that it is a really fun place to go. I mean, every hour there's this Indian exhibit where they do this natural thing with the water, and, there's a big circle and this gigantic Indian statue. There's a museum there for the Pequots that's very, very well done. And there's fun stuff,
it's not well attended, it's kind of
a neat place.
No, and I mean, that's where a loyalty marketing company, such as All-Star comes into play. I mean, to your point, every hour on the hour on a weekend, there's usually a promotion, and must be present to win, and giving away TVs and cars, and mm-hmm. people are earning points based on their play, how much they play, how often, and whatnot, and those points can be spent like currency on both casino offerings, the food, the beverage, the hotels, and then out of casino offerings such as a loyalty program where, it's Billy's birthday, I'm going to get him a Callaway golf putter, so I'm going to use my points that I've earned, my rewards points, and again, it's something tangible that I can take away, other than a win or a loss.
So this is how the loyalty programs work, then, and I think in Foxwoods they call it wampum, right?
They did, and they it was a little too esoteric for them, so they got away from wampum, and it's simply rewards now.
Okay.
When we started back in the mid '90s, it was the Wampum Rewards Program, and then when they brought the MGM partnership on board, which wasn't really a partnership other than name only for their new hotel tower, they changed the rewards program to Dream Rewards. Now I think they're eventually phasing themselves out of that MGM affiliation, and they just went to simply rewards, Foxwoods Rewards. Hmm. Most clubs have a hook, it's the destination shop, it's the Trump One Exchange, it's, we're involved in a number of them, and they all try to brand them differently.
And the rewards, basically what it is it's essentially an internal form of money that you're getting these coupons that you can then use to do stuff at the site.
It's not coupons, really. They rate your play. And
okay. The
only way they can rate your play is if you opt in by going to a Players Club booth and getting a rewards card. I think as much as 80-85% of all play now is rated, whereas when these programs first came on board, some people were reluctant. They didn't see the benefit in being in the club. They want Uncle Sam to know maybe that they were winning or losing. Now people have come to realize that it's an adjunct to the whole experience, and you're literally throwing money away by not being in the club and getting the points and then using those points in a myriad of ways.
It might actually lessen the possibility of you losing, because these are incentives based upon usage as opposed to winning or losing. Is that right?
I like to refer to us as kind of like the Robin Hoods. We steal from the rich and we give to the poor. But fortunately, these programs took off to the point where no casino will risk being the place that doesn't offer the rewards program.
Right.
And I don't care if you're in a riverboat casino in Missouri, if you're on the Las Vegas Strip, if you're out in Indian country, in Oklahoma. There's a loyalty program.
Now your organization actually patented this whole idea, and you're involved in implementing these programs all around the United States at this point. Is that true?
Well, patent didn't really patent the idea. I think we
popularized it.
Yes, yeah, that's true. I think we're one of we exhibit at the Global Gaming Exposition in Las Vegas. They call it G2E. It's the biggest gaming trade show in the world, and there may be 27 different chip manufacturers or people who provide the chairs or the felt. But in our world of turnkey incentive and loyalty programs, there's three or four of us that do the whole shoot and match. And we're right here in Mass with 60,000 square foot warehouse. We factory direct source all of our awards. We warehouse and drop ship right here. We handle all the customer service here, all the marketing communication strategies emanate from here. So yeah, we're one of the few shops in the country that you can, and certainly one of the first that really targeted the industry. And I have to give Foxwoods credit for that. Everybody wanted to emulate them back in the mid 90s. So it was an easy door opener. All you had to do is say, "Yeah, I handle the Wampum Rewards program," and they're like, "Hey, when can you come in?"
I bet. So what it is basically is that it's almost like a Sears Roebuck catalog. Is that right? I mean, you can get stuff if you turn in your wampum or your awards coupons.
More like a green stamps for those really old timers that where you go to the gas station, you get the stamps, and the stamps build towards a gift. It's not certainly not everything we do, and not everything we do is directed at patrons. For example, most companies in the incentive and award business will have service award programs they offer. So, you're at a company 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. Back in the day, you got the watch and a pat on the back. Now people expect a little more, so maybe you get the 10-year pin, but you get a catalog, whether it's physical or web-based, to go pick your 10-year gift. That's where a company like All-Star comes into play. Or you have a safety recognition program. We happen to run the largest safety recognition program in the waste business for Allied Waste Republic, where 35,000 safety-sensitive employees, mostly garbage truck drivers, quite frankly, are getting points every quarter they go without an incident. And, they shop those points.
I admire their work. I mean, that's a tough job. And basically what this is it's like a little extra value to a day's work. It's you can then get various things in the catalog and have them shipped to you, and that you guys have a warehouse where you you handle these orders. I mean, that's a tremendous service.
It is. And, you know, if I asked you, Chuck, you know, if I said to you, you did a great job, I want to give you $1,000 or I want to give you $1,000 worth of merchandise, you, like most people, would say, I'll take the $1,000, thanks. And
right.
But you put it in your gas tank. You might have bought a meal with it. You might have put some in the bank. Most people don't remember what they did with the cash. By forcing them to use those points, or those, that gift, whatever reason they earned it, for tangible rewards, let's say that's $1,000 that goes to a set of golf clubs, and you're a weekend warrior golfer. Every time you open your trunk and pull those clubs out, there's a flash of where you got. Nobody forgets. I don't care if it's a clock radio. Nobody forgets where they got something for free or, you know, as an award. So that's the reason this whole industry basically exists, is because tangible rewards are more effective than cash in terms of long-term recognition and appreciation.
Gary, do you work with companies other than gaming companies?
Yeah, well, I just mentioned a couple, Allied Waste Republic,
right,
and certainly financial service companies. We have a very large online trading company that rewards new deposit accounts with mm-hmm. gifts. There's the term tchotchke, you know, which relates
right.
to logo pens and mugs and things of that nature. We certainly have a number of accounts that source those. We have a division that does that as well. So yeah, I would say probably about 50% of our revenue right now is casino generated, but it's not, you know, my dad founded the company. My two brothers and I run it for the most part. And when he founded the company, he certainly had no inkling that we'd ever be selling casinos. He was a manufacturer's rep and was trying to put together deals.
Right.
Back in the day, it was, you know, go to the grocery store in January and get the letter A in the Encyclopedia Britannica and, you know, the continuity programs as they were known with banks. That used to be huge until they were regulated out.
Right.
So,
you know, I think that business people listening to this might find it interesting, and I am finding it interesting simply as the host of a radio program that just last week has become nationally syndicated.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you very much. And by the way, that could, you know, I could offer gifts to callers, you know, like, as I remember Jerry. Do you remember the late Jerry Williams?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I consider Jerry to have been my mentor, and I'm proud to say I brought him on the air during the final months of his life. And He would give away coffee mugs. He'd give away all kinds of things with funny sayings on them, and various. We're talking, you know, as you say, tchotchkes. I mean, small level.
Yeah, but
it was interesting. Yeah, you bet. I mean, people would, you know, it really drew people in. It drew listeners in. It's the kind of thing that if you got one of these things, you never forgot it. I mean, it's and plus it's actually a collector's item because it's limited. You know, if it's X number issued, then that takes on value in the same way that the old G.I. Joe dolls back in the 1960s are now worth, you know, $1,000 because there's just so many of them.
Yeah. And, well, so, G.I. Joe would be a you know, mostly a retail item, but you know, the eBay is flooded with old, you know, gas station giveaways, replica trucks, and, you know, vintage cars and things of that nature. No, it's been around. The industry's been around for a long time, but interestingly enough, you know, 20 years ago, you'd say, "Oh yeah, I've worked with incentive and award company," and they'd be like, "What is that?" And you'd have to explain it, and they'd see that same person a year later, and they'd say, "So what is it All-Star exactly does again now?" I think the average household of four people, you know, husband, wife, and two children, I think the last number I heard was involved in 14 loyalty programs, which means long-distance phone, frequent
right.
flyer, you know, credit card. I mean, you get granular right down to the vodka you like to drink. I mean, everybody, whether they realize it or not, is become attuned to being rewarded for their patronage, whether it's a brand, whether it's a, you know, a casino.
I mean, it's become very much part of the fabric of everyday life. I know that credit cards now are into it. You know, you get points put on your credit card. There's, I believe a while ago there was one that you could bring it to certain restaurants on a list and get, you know, half off or whatever. So
yeah, I use my own Amex points to buy. I have a kid in D.C. and another one in New York, and I'll buy, you know, a Ruby Tuesdays or a, you know, Olive Garden gift card and pop it in the mail, and they think it's great, you know, and it's
you bet.
It makes me feel good about being an Amex customer.
Yeah, I mean, what in the present atmosphere would you consider, Gary, to constitute a loyalty program that would really catch somebody's eye that relates to what people are doing today?
Well, it depends what industry you're talking about. In the gaming industry, the one that's the most copied and emulated is Total Rewards, which was a Caesars Harris initiative that really took off, and it forced other companies to look at, you know, what they were offering. So, you know, the MGM properties, of which, you know, you mentioned New York where you stayed, you know, the Bellagio,
yeah.
And so on and so forth. There's nine on the Strip. They have M Life, and so each major, you know, gaming institution has a loyalty program. I think Total Rewards is still kind of the leader in terms of the breadth of the offerings, the things you can use with your points, both on property and partnerships they've forged outside of the gaming entities. And in credit cards, you know, American Express Rewards. I mean, I feel like a little kid. I just got my 2013 rewards guide in the mail, and
wow.
And I don't know if you're an Amex card holder. This is it's incredibly well done. It's everything from restaurants to travel to tangible rewards, and so, you know, there's a lot of good examples out there.
No, I mean it's the kind of thing like every day is Christmas, you know. It's
if
you,
you've got
you
the points,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, but, you bet. And in a sense, it's it makes sense from a simply from a personal business standpoint, in that there are a lot of things that one does in the course of a day or a week that they could incentivize if they structure it properly, if they work with certain companies and make sure that they get. It's just like an added bonus. It's like having a your employer give you an extra perk in your paycheck, in a sense.
No, and I mean, you're right. And the Sight Foundation, which is one of our industry, you know, research groups, says that incentive programs aimed at individuals increase performance by 27%. So that's a pretty big number. And, you know, it begs the question, why wouldn't you have one?
Right.
If they're that successful. So I think that the trick, like with anything, you know, once you get further along the life cycle is to keep it fresh and keep, mm-hmm. you know, adding new wrinkles.
Right. And
so that, you know, they don't become same old, you know.
And to in a sense not look into this is like leaving money on the table, because it's something that would occur almost automatically as a result of things that one does every day. And so it's kind of just from a consumer standpoint, I would think that people might look into the, you know, and that aspect of what they do. What about online legal gambling at this point, legal gaming? How is that going to affect you? How does it affect the industry that you're in?
Well, that's real interesting and obviously very topical.
Yep.
You know, Nevada passed it, and New Jersey, Chris Christie signed a bill, but then it was appealed at the state level. So that remains a little murky how it's going to work. It's a matter of if and not when. And, you know, the general thinking is that the brick and mortar casinos in this country, especially, you know, the ones with a multitude of locations like the MGM World, like the Caesars World, will be the ones that control the online gaming. And
right.
Heretofore, you know, online gaming at least the legal ones, don't offer cash rewards. But most of these properties, and even a lot of the smaller ones, I mean, you know, Larry Flint has a card room in L.A. It's called Hustler Casino, and they have an online poker site that's, you know, for amusement only. You know, the old betting card,
right?
For
sure.
Amusement only. But what it really is a breeding ground for the time when online gaming for cash is legal. They'll already have a built-in audience, and how it affects us, you're still going to have to reward that play. So whether it's you know, in a bricks and mortar location or in the virtual world, you're still going to need to attract people to that site, and one of the ways to do that is the players club scenario and earning points based on your play. And in the casino world, they call it coin in. And then, you know, you're not really supposed to know the formula, but I know, for example, at Foxwoods, you get a point for $80 of coin in. That's not $80 lost. I mean, you could go there with a $200 budget, and you could play a slot machine, which I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, but $5 a hand blackjack. You could play that for 6 hours, and you might leave with $180. Maybe you only lost 20, but the coin in, you know, is a multiple of how many bets you actually made during that time. So let's just say that you recycled that money 20 times, 200, 4,000, you know, divide that by 80, and that's basically how many points you earned. So there will be a methodology similar to that in the online world that will award points, and hopefully will be the company that in many cases says, okay, sure, they earned some points on the Caesars poker site. Now they can go spend them at Caesars, but maybe they can also spend them in a web-based catalog for, you know, fishing poles and Blu-ray DVD players that
you bet. I mean, in a sense, it gets into, as we were talking about earlier, usage as the primary factor in not whether or not you win or lose. I mean, and even in a sense, if you are losing, or if you walk out with less than you walked in with, you could walk out with still a package of points that will give you rewards. So, you know,
right, and that's whether you're sitting at home, you know, playing online or making the trip. So it remains to be seen. It's going to be, you know, there probably will be some federal legislation at some point. The states want to keep control over it. And they'll, you know, that battle will go on for a while. And
right. I remember, I think we called Jerry Williams, my, you know, speaking of whom, he was championing the idea of a national lottery as a way to actually pay down the national debt. Not that it would be that lucrative, but that he was calling for this, and with the funds earmarked specifically toward reducing the national deficit, which, of course, was not as big a problem back then as it is now, but it's been around forever.
Yeah, well,
I thought that was interesting.
It is. I mean, Powerball is proof that it would work. You know, how many states?
Yep.
How many states is that now? 15? I don't even know. But I mean, I know that certainly, you know, people are drawn to mega rewards, and you know, some people call it taxation by stupidity. But it would work.
It would, and especially since 50, I think it's 50% at least of the revenues would go toward the state, or in this case, toward the federal government, to reduce the deficit, and the other 50 or whatever would go to the winner, or the winner.
Yeah, it's the 50-50 raffle on steroids. But you know, we've all been at local fundraisers, and that's, you know, whether it's the sticks or the wheel or I live on a lake.
Having bingo in the basement, in a sense.
Right. I live on a lake, and we have a 50-50 raffle on when this giant meatball is going to fall through the ice into the water, you know. So
so people bet on just about anything.
That's it.
Gary,
that's
what is it. The difference between, and I mean this both culturally and literally, between the Vegas casinos, the Vegas scene, as it were, and here in Massachusetts or here in New England, and what is the difference specifically with regard to incentive programs?
Well, culturally, I mean, Las Vegas is a fantasy, you know, for a lot of people. That's why they have, you know, I think McCarran Airport had 38 million arrivals last year, number one in the country, as far as I know. And you don't have to be, you know, a gambler to fantasize about going to Las Vegas. I mean, look at the way it's been portrayed in movies, you know, The Hangover and whatnot. It's just It's taken on a life of its own.
It has a mystique.
Right. It is a mystique, and that's a good word for it. That Massachusetts is not going to have that kind of allure with its gaming. It's going to be catering to a regional crowd. I mean, they can call them destination resort casinos, but they're not drawing on the same, you know, you can draw a 50-mile circle around wherever these three end up, and 90% of your play is going to come from within that 50-mile radius. So,
you're not going to have the Rat Pack, you know, and you're not going to have the whole Sinatra and Joey Bishop and just, you know, this kind of
exactly.
cultural thing going on here in Palmer.
Which isn't to say that Massachusetts itself doesn't have allure. I mean, there's a reason, you know, we're attracting more and more filmmaking. And, mm-hmm. you know, Ben Affleck is stock and is sure. rising pretty fast. And now, obviously, you know, you've got The Departed, you've got Shutter Island, you've got The Town, you've got, you know, Jeremy Renner and the guy who just won the Oscar, David O. Russell.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who Silver Linings Playbook? He's back in town filming another movie. So, I think there certainly is some appeal to we came to Boston because it's a cool city. We're going to Fenway. We're going to go to the North End,
yep.
and you know we're going to go to the casino. It might give people a reason to stick around an extra day, but I don't think no one's flying from Nevada to Boston to go to our casino.
Right.
Whereas
no,
people
I get
from Boston
that,
are flying to, you know.
But there are ways to make it a part of the regional fabric that would draw people here. People come to Boston for, you know, the history. They come here to go to college for sure, you know, and they come
yep.
here for a lot of various reasons. And I think that the casino could become a part of that fabric.
It's going to take a while to spin it, you know, in the vein of a Concord or you know, an old Sturbridge Village,
right,
which is, you know, more institutional type, you know, iconic Massachusetts, more New England things. But yeah, if done properly, I think it will. And you actually mentioned another good point. With the fact that this is a state that's probably second to none in terms of, you know, higher education, you've got to be real careful with underage gambling, that's a time in kids' lives when they are prone to some sort of addiction. And you know, there's a lot of college students that are 21, so
right.
you know,
okay.
putting
something
a casino,
I think that has to be addressed. I mean, I would think.
It is. You know, Palmer's only a half hour ride to UMass. So,
yeah, right.
You know.
What? How has the economic slowdown affected business? And do you see an end to that?
Our business specifically.
Yes.
It's interesting. You know, sometimes companies, when it's things are tough, they'll get more creative and they'll try more promotions. And when they do that, a company like All-Star is going to be the one they're going to go to. So mm-hmm. we don't have the giant peaks and valleys that you see in kind of so-called real-world scenario.
Right.
We've, knock on wood, just had a steady growth. I mean, we went from, you know, six people in the late 80s to about 56 now, and our revenue has only taken one minor dip in the last decade mm-hmm. from year to year. So fortunately, we're not – now, the gaming side, the reason we've maintained a steady growth in the gaming side is not because any one of our individual properties is doing so well, because they're not. It's just that we keep adding them. So, you know, I mean, we're in Atlantic City, we're out in the Midwest, we're in the Southeast. You know, we've got clients up and down, you know, the Eastern Seaboard and whatnot. So we've added, you know, we've maintained by adding accounts. And to your point, when hopefully the economy does turn around, I think we'll be in a really good position to watch some of our clients' performance improve, and thereby, you know, ours will. But
plus, I think the other factor that needs to, should be mentioned regarding your business is that there is a barter aspect to it, and that seems to be have its own economic force. It seems to do either well or not well, regardless of where the more general economy is going, because people have a need to do this, to barter, to get extra services. So, that probably serves as somewhat of a buffer, I would think, for generally the barter industry.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's more cost effective to give away something of tangible value that maybe the perception is it's worth more than you paid for it. So, you know, go back to the $1,000 example. If I'm going to give you a $1,000 bonus, I can't give you $900 and pretend it's $1,000. But if I'm going to give you a TV that, you know, 65-inch, you know, LCD TV with all the bells and whistles, that may be, you know, a $999 retail item, you might pay $800 for it. So, in some respects, you can get more bang for your buck with the perceived value of these giveaways versus just trying to buy the business.
Gary, how do you expand your business? Is it by basically doing sales connections, or do you advertise? Do you promote? For example, have you done any radio promotions or anything like that?
Very little. You know, we at least in Massachusetts, is a very finite amount of people that we target, and we certainly like to think we know who they are. Every now and then we'll have a pleasant surprise. But I'd say, for the most part, trade shows. I mean, you know, my brother Brian is very in tune with safety recognition programs, so they go to the American Society of Safety Employees show, and we exhibit there. I mentioned the Global Gaming Exposition. I'll be at the East Coast Gaming Congress in May in Atlantic City. We go to the New England gaming shows. Every region of the country has a regional gaming show. So we do a lot of trade show attending, and you know, certainly a lot of word of mouth. And in the gaming world, one of the greatest things that's happened to us is that as gaming has expanded across the country, I think we're going on 580 casinos now. Mm-hmm. A lot of the talent moves around because they have to lure them from the likes of a Foxwoods or an MGM or a Mohegan Sun. And, you know, all of a sudden the phone will ring and our friend from Foxwoods will be out in the Midwest at a tribal property. And, you know, they don't want to mess around and you know, go. They want to stick with what worked for them in the past. So we'll get a lot of folks that move on and just bring us in. And that's wonderful. I mean, it's
I would think that would be the main way to go for you in terms of people looking at the successes you've had, you know, starting with Foxwoods and the others, and wanting to emulate it in a sense that it's particularly targeted to their and tailored to their own business. And so that creates a buzz.
Believe me, you know, there's a casino in the prison town of Boonville, Missouri, and I've been to it. and you need to offer those folks a little something different than you do in Philadelphia or Las Vegas for that matter. So, you know, you do have to be creative, and it's not really a cookie cutter thing, but certainly there are tried and true things. You know, if you do an orchid giveaway on Mother's Day, I don't care where the casino is, it's going to be a big hit, you know, but a fishing pole might not go as well in Empire City at Yonkers Raceway, you know, where there's nowhere to fish.
Sure. No, I get that.
Versus, you know, out in the Lakes region of New York. So you know, that's where the marketing side. I mean, I was a marketing major, UMass grad, and that's where we like to put on that hat and try to get, you know the demographic of the property, and certainly we're Massachusetts natives, you know, born and bred and never left. So we'd like to think we'd be in a great position to help, and we already have actually. I mean, I was asked to go out on Mohegan Sun's behalf last year to a small business forum at the Mass Mutual Center, where they brought in a bunch of small businesses, and they had myself, they had the purchasing director from Mohegan Sun, they had a Connecticut Chamber of Commerce guy, and we basically fielded questions from the Springfield area business folks, and you know, I told them the one thing they wanted to hear about Mohegan Sun. I said, we've been working with them for 15 years. They pay their bills. Net 30 means net 30, not net I'll pay you whenever I feel like it. And, you know, that got a big chuckle. But, you know, these people needed to see somebody locally that works with casinos, because let's face it, there's not a lot of us. So we've tried to put ourselves out there, certainly where we already have a relationship, like Mohegan Sun, like Foxwoods. Mm. Like MGM. I actually don't do business right now with Wynn. Not for lack of trying, but mm-hmm. he's got his Vegas connections, and you know, we're not going to go over to Macau and right. ship, you know. So, you know, I haven't, I mean, I selfishly hope he doesn't get the bid, because we do know some folks at Caesars, but whoever it is, you know, we like our chances being.
Have you done any business with Sheldon Adelson?
At Sands, not direct. Well, yeah, with his Bethlehem, Pennsylvania right. property.
And I mean, there's another classic. The only thing I know about him is from politics.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I've
he
heard
his money.
Yes, but he's definitely a casino guy.
He is.
Gary Galone,
Massachusetts resident.
Yeah, you bet. From Dorchester, I think he's from Dorchester. We've reached pretty much the end of the program. Please let us know where you can be reached, websites, any pertinent information.
Well, our website is www.incentiveusa.com. Being one of the principals and founders, I'm simply Gary at incentiveusa.com. And that's it. There's our marketing communications team did a great job updating our website. We won, the Galonic family won a small business, Worcester Magazine Small Business Family Business Award. Nice. And there's a video that they did, which was presented last year out at Cyprian Keys in Boylston, that's on our website as well. And that tells
great.
Kind of the story. So, yeah, have at it.
Excellent. Well, Gary, I want to thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Chuck, thank you. It was great.
All right. Thanks so much. Gary Galonek, he's the principal and national sales manager gaming at All Star Incentive Marketing. You're listening to Chuck Moore Speaks Special Edition. Have a good afternoon, everybody.